chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome back. Welcome in. This is Country Roads Confidential at earsports.com, part of the Paramount Podcast Network. I am Mike Casazza. Opening today with a question for Chris Anderson. Chris, when is the world going to recognize that you were the first person to recognize how special Jalen Daniels would become? Pulled that one out of our mailbag early today. Accurate. The train started a long time ago. You got on before I did. Seems pretty providential, though. Looks like they've got a quarterback in Lawrence, and 4-0, first place in the conference, right on the verge of being ranked. What year is this?
Yeah, I can't believe it. Wonderful question. I'll pay that poster his $5 later. I think it was on one of these podcasts early on. I think it was his freshman year. I just wondered aloud, like, hey, Kansas sucks, that year. And they got this quarterback that has some athleticism, has shown something. Why not put him out there? Let him learn. Let him build. Let him grow with the guys around him. And that was kind of my take on it, because I saw that he could be special if you gave him the time and the effort. And when he was just a true freshman, you give him those 4 years, you could really turn him into something special in a few years. And they really didn't do that. They kind of yo-yoed with him. Hey, you're playing. Hey, you're starting. Hey, you're out. We're going with this guy. Never mind. You're back in. Back and forth. I believe this is the first year that he's truly been. I mean, I know towards the end of last season, that's when he took over. That's when people started to really realize who he was. Now he's the man. And has looked great so far this year. He looked good again this past week. Accounted for 5 touchdowns and only had 4 interceptions. I think that I believe the word is efficient.
Incompletions.
Four incompletions to 5 total touchdowns. I think he threw for 4 and ran for 1. I think that's what we call efficient.
Remember last year when they were like, should we redshirt him? Should we play him? Like, they had a question about whether or not they should bust his redshirt late in the season because Kansas was going places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And like, I don't know, maybe we can give you up the air. Well, that 2020 year doesn't count. So last year really was his true freshman year. Now he's a true sophomore. They have him as a junior because, I don't know, maybe he's going to win the Heisman and go pro this year. We can have these conversations now.
Where did I see that? We're recording this Monday morning. I think it was Bill Connolly over at ESPN. Was it a Heisman straw poll? And literally leading right now, Jalen Daniels in a Heisman. It is Bill Connolly. And he says that he's been awarding the Heisman each week of the season, tallying up the points, like each week, like, hey, this guy was the best overall player, 2nd, 3rd, and then giving points like it's a Heisman. And through 4 weeks, he's got Jalen Daniels as his leader. Now, obviously, he doesn't expect that to be the end game or the choice, but I found it interesting that pretty much everybody, what is that called? The Q rating? Like, what's Jalen Daniels' Q rating right now? Like, is there anybody out there who's zagging? Or do you want to zag, Mike? You can get a little zag in here. Mm. Everybody else's zig and just be like, is he that good? Is Jalen Daniels that good?
He's in the perfect offense for him.
Yeah.
Like, that's just fun to watch. Like, I didn't know they were going to be this good. Like, I just kind of skimmed through their highlights against, I don't know, whatever that team was they played first, Tennessee Tech, I think. And I can remember saying, wow, man, a lot of like pre-snap stuff. And it looks like people are like spinning out of position all the time. And we had like this very ominous warning about, watch out, if you're going to get big plays against WVU, it's going to be with motion and pre-snap stuff. And that was what happened, but it was all by design, and they've done it in every game since. And it's like a video game. Like, if you were playing, if that video game comes out now, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many people are just putting in the Kansas playbook?
Yeah.
And even crazier, how many people are picking Kansas just because the quarterback's so fun? But their offense is very good. And like, what kind of freaks me out now is they're 4-0. Chris, they're at home against Iowa State and then at home against TCU. Are we prepared for 6-0 Kansas?
I'm not. I think it's a legitimate possibility, but I'm not mentally prepared to handle that.
They have to gag on one of those, I would think, just because the story has to go sideways at some point. But I don't know. They're good enough on defense where their offense is going to answer scores. And, like, you can get into a shootout with Iowa State. Maybe TCU, too, but I don't know. Could be fun. Anyways, we interrupt the Kansas portion of the podcast to get to West Virginia, where now things look a little bit better than they did before. And if you kind of take time to calibrate your expectations, you realize that, hey, lost to a Kansas team that isn't terrible, but also beat a Tech team that maybe isn't as good as expected. We kind of went over this in the postgame podcast Thursday night. Be patient with this stuff. Don't get too far ahead of yourself because schedule's strange. And then 48 hours later, the Big 12 is flipped upside down when Kansas State wins. Again, Kansas wins. You have, Baylor kind of remembering itself a little bit. Iowa State looks like it's going to have some issues offensively throughout the year. And you got West Virginia team with an offense that's, sure, 0-1, but it's going to have some home games and some chances to be pretty good. But it begins this week on the road against Texas, which is not back. Had a 14-point lead, let it go away, lost in overtime to Texas Tech. That Texas Tech game looms for West Virginia and Neil Brown in particular because it's on the road and he hasn't beaten them yet. My point being that it's going to be October by the next time we talk for a game review, and who knows how much things will change, but volatile conference is what we expected. That's what we're getting. And then West Virginia doing its part by going 0-2 and now 2-0.
Yeah, I'm looking at that Texas game and it's going to be tough. I have already done a preview pod with Chip Brown from our Horns 247 site. And he mentioned something during that talk about Texas and their kind of duality of home and away, like just two completely different teams under Steve Sarkisian. And I looked at this season, it's only four games, three games at home, one game away. So how much can you take from that? But it's there. You notice a trend already. Offensively, you play Alabama, so maybe you don't take the offensive stats to heart that much, but they played Alabama tight, obviously losing 20-19 on a last second field goal, but they've given up 20 some more points. That 37 points against Texas Tech was over 20 points more than what they'd been giving up on average at home. But went back and looked at last year. Is this a full thing? Is this all of Sarkisian tenure kind of thing? The answer is definitively yes. On offense, Texas averaged 150 more yards per game at home than they did on the road. On defense, they gave up 100 fewer yards at home than on the road. I don't know. I mean, obviously, home field advantage is a thing for the most part, especially in college. But that is a pretty wild swing for a team that's supposed to be, you know, full of five-star talent with professional coaches. Really can't be let that kind of swing in. Unfortunately for West Virginia, game's in Austin. So this is going to be a tougher matchup than I think a lot of people even realize.
Let's stick with this for a second. How much do you think home field even matters anymore?
I don't know. Like in the NFL, I'm not sure it matters at all. Like hardly at all. Maybe only a couple teams does it even matter. College, it's more important in college than it is in the NFL. I'm not even ready to debate that. Are you ready to debate that?
I would think it would in college more just because, I mean, the players are variables themselves.
Right.
One differs from the next. Like, never mind locker to locker. Like the guy next to you is very different from you, but the person in that locker is going to be different from one day to the next too, just because young adults, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I would think that the comforts of home and the consistency of home would be a huge advantage. And I just don't know that I know that anymore to be valid or applicable. Like I'm looking at the Big 12 expanded standings, right?
Yeah.
There's one 1-0 team in conference play at home. It's Texas Tech. Everybody else who won a road game. And you're like, okay, well, that's 1 week. True. But West Virginia gets a win on the road. Kansas, 2-0 on the road. Kansas State, 1-0 on the road. TCU, 2-0 on the road. Iowa State, Oklahoma, 1-0. Like, that's a lot of road wins. And you're talking about, like, going to Nebraska to win, which, okay, Nebraska's not very good. But, like, Oklahoma still got to win that game. Like, there's a lot of road games for teams to win. And that's what's happened here. And, like, now you look at the schedule ahead, and you're like, all right, well, they get them at home. They get them on the road. They get them at home. When you see all these offenses, and in particular the quarterback play at a high level again, I just don't know it's as predictive of value as it was before.
Well, unless it's Austin. Unless it's Austin, Texas, apparently.
Presumably, right? Well, which seems to bring out the best in WVU quarterbacks and offenses too. So that's, I guess, maybe a good thing if you're West Virginia, right? Because now, like, all right, we're talking about, you can't guarantee the home games. Well, maybe you don't have to dismiss the opportunities on the road anymore, either, i.e., Texas Tech. So that could be good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think West Virginia, I'm pulling it up as we speak, as trying to get it right before, but I feel like West Virginia has actually done well at Texas, and my memory is not as bad as I thought. West Virginia, 4-2 in Austin all time. Actually better on the road than at home in this series. Only 2-3 in Morgantown, 4-2 in Austin, Texas. So not too shabby.
They won four times at Texas.
Four times. I'm looking at it. One of them was back in 1956. So, I mean, we're counting it. But even still, yeah, again, 2012, 2016, and 2018.
When they played the 2018 game, there was a weird stat about, I had to look it up, I forget, but like West Virginia had won as many like games at Texas as like, I had to look it up. It was a bonkers stat that I couldn't believe, but it was true. But like their third win there was significant, as like it matched some type of total that Texas had. I forget, but some of the games they played there have been memorable too. Obviously, you think about the first one, the 2018 one. 2020 was not that, but even in between, they've had like the losses have been entertaining or competitive too. They've had some good ones before. Wasn't there a game where, like, there was 13 guys in the field in the last play or something too?
Yeah, well, and then what was it? Yeah, 2020, even though it was, I mean, 17-13, it wasn't exciting, but that was the going for it on fourth down 16 times in field goal range, and the seemed like pass interference that they didn't call when West Virginia was trying to come down and score and win the game and everything else. And, yeah, I'm looking at the scores. 4-point game, 1-point game, 4-point game, 17-point game, and then 3-point game and 1-point game. So five of the six games have been by 4 points or fewer in Austin.
I had to look it up. The 2016 game, I remember being there, and there was something crazy about it. Like, Texas had like too many guys in the field, and the play still went on. And there was like, it was a great, the coaches on West Virginia side were going crazy about what happened. That was 16, right? Yeah, because Greer was 18.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So like, I'll have to look that one up. Maybe it'll be a fresh set kind of a thing. Like, there's been interesting moments there too. And as the standard with Texas, when you go to that game, you have to get the requisite officials taking a photo at the midfield photograph too, which is always my favorite, because why wouldn't Big 12 officials be so impressed and excited about refereeing a game at Texas too? It's always kind of amusing to me. We'll get into the matchups later in the week. Plenty to do in podcast form. As you mentioned, we'll have Chip Brown. You and I will have our preview podcast. All the regular things on the written side as well. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Neil Brown, players, coordinators. Also, a little basketball thing going on today, too. That's getting underway. So, busy time here. But we're not going to be forgetting our responsibilities to the mailbag. Let's get into the Q&A, Chris.
Well, let's start with, I guess, Texas here. One of the first questions, or not one of the first questions, but one of the questions that was repeated several times, and it's for good reason. Does Quinn Ewers start against us on Saturday? What are the pros and cons of facing Ewers over Card? That's from T.A. Godwin to Godwin and several others. Mike, I can chime in with what Chip told us, at least as far as the Sunday night, Monday morning update on Ewers, but I think you might know a lot about these two quarterbacks as well and how they compare.
Well, Ewers is better.
Yes.
More talented. what they're trying to do, he's better at that. Here's the question, though. If you're West Virginia, do you want him or Card? I don't know, because you would think, all right, well, obviously I don't want the better of the two, but that injury he's coming back from is really severe. And I'd be surprised if he came back so quickly, especially him being as young as he is. Like, you're kind of putting him, I don't want to say putting him at risk, but that's a lot to ask a young guy to come back from. He's not young anymore, but if he gets hit, if he throws the ball weird, something happens that isn't natural, that thing could really flare up again and could be bad. And then all of a sudden you got him out there. He's not going to be 100% if he plays, which makes you think that he probably won't play. But if he's not 100% and then he's compromised further, well, now you got like a wounded duck back there. And then if you're West Virginia, that's pretty inviting, I would think. So maybe you want to see Ewers back there because he's going to be rusty. He's not going to be 100%. And you could knock a little bit more out of him, I guess, if you wanted to. And Card's still good. Like, offense wasn't their problem last week. And honestly, Chris, you and I could turn around and hand it off to Bijan Robinson. So, like, that's not necessarily what makes their offense go right now. They do have that capacity to go up and down and score. Worthy's having a time of cornerbacks now, too, so that's good for the passing game. But they do so much running the ball that kind of doesn't matter who quarterback is. To some extent, but you still want a playmaker back there, which makes me think I'd want a healthy playmaker. If he can go, and I don't know what it is, but I don't think he's going to be 100%, so I would suspect he won't. But I think it's an interesting point, though. Who do you want back there? Do you want the more talented guy who's also injured? Or you want the guy who's maybe getting some reps? You know, it'll be his third start in a row, but it's Card. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Second start in a row? I don't know.
No, third.
But maybe he'll be more comfortable. Maybe he'll be better at things. And again, offense wasn't necessarily the problem last week.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, Ewers and considerably better, considerably higher upside. I think there is a difference in, so let's say style, because I guess you kind of go, your style is whatever your offensive style is, but Ewers is known more for his arm strength, his deep ball, his throwing, while Card brings a little bit more mobility than Ewers does. Looking at it briefly again, these are not too many stats. It's a limited scope here, but Ewers is averaging over 2 more yards per completion. Likes to get the ball downfield a little more, so that would be something that would concern me if he was out there, because West Virginia's secondary, not, you know, that's been an issue all year long. But as you noted, if his strength is throwing the deep ball, that's going to be hindered by a sprained AC joint, right? That's going to be hindered by that kind of injury considerably, I would think. So if he's not 100%, you know, that's going to really hurt what is the strength of his game. Meanwhile, you think Card is maybe not going to throw it as deep or as accurately as Ewers is, but he can move with his feet. And you think to the quarterbacks of West Virginia's face this year, that might not be a great thing, because they did not do a very good job with Jalen Daniels moving around in the pocket, getting outside of the pocket and running on his own. So you kind of got to pick your poison when it comes to these two things.
Card 20 for 30, 277, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick last week against Texas Tech. Better than his previous game. Worthy, their big-time receiver, Xavier Worthy, 7 catches for 91 yards in 2 starts with Card. So a lot of your over-the-top, get-it-to-your-best-player stuff hasn't been working quite as well.
Also injured, by the way.
Yeah, that's true, too. How much is he going to play? Is he going to play? I mean, will he be 100%? That's a question, too. Their offense, again, is not the issue, but there are some questions there for sure.
Moving on to the next question. Let's see. They're right here next to each other, so I'll just roll with them. This one from J. Mole 1989. A third of the way into the season, who are the Big 12 award winners? Player of the year, newcomer, etc. I don't think we need to go full first team, second team here, but Big 12 offensive player of the year or player, just player of the year?
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So is it a Kansas sweep, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Coach of the year?
Coach of the year, player of the year. Mm-hmm. Do they have the defensive player of the year? Yeah, I mean, West Virginia, we haven't gotten into Big 12 play, so it's hard for me to really decide who's been playing, you know, amazingly, especially on defense. You kind of get a glimpse of what's going on offensively. Defense, I feel like you have to get further into actual conference play or where West Virginia's going to play them before we really know.
Are we on Lonnie Phelps train already? Are we doing this? Are we going to make Lonnie Phelps the defensive player of the year and the newcomer of the year?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay. Let's rephrase the question to better have a chance at answering it right now. A third of the way through the year, who from West Virginia University is a potential candidate for some of the major conference awards? We'll make it easy for us.
Okay.
I'll just list them off there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 major awards. Offensive play. I'll just say the award. You tell me yes or no whether West Virginia has somebody that could be potentially in there. And if so, who? Offensive player of the year?
No.
Defensive player of the year?
No.
Offensive newcomer of the year?
Freshman or newcomer?
This is new. There is a difference. They do have separate categories. Freshman, yeah, and newcomer.
If Daniels gets hot, two touchdowns a game is going to do it. But if he gets hot, yeah.
Defensive newcomer?
No.
Offensive freshman?
Yes.
Well, who, Michael?
What's his name? I forget. The tight end.
Okay.
By the way, he's listed as a tight end, and everywhere you look, his stuff up. Like, when West Virginia hands out the two deep in his dress list, there's a running back or a tight end number 12 that's carrying the ball, and other teams are like, wait a minute, is that the right guy? Like, no, that's him. And then, like, all the stat sites have him as a tight end somewhere, too, so it looks kind of funny.
Love it. Defensive freshman.
I'm not doing it, no. I know people want – no, it's not happening.
We're going to get to that question in a little bit, so we'll save it. Special teams player of the year.
Sure.
Yeah, Casey Legg. West Virginia currently, I just put this up, I think, moments ago. I think it was scheduled for my defense and special teams grades. West Virginia is one of only three teams in the country with at least 8 field goal attempts and perfect, make it 8 for 8. So,
oh, Casey Legg. I forgot Legg. I thought you were talking about Anthony Del Negro. But Legg, worthy.
Yeah. I mean, if Del Negro ends up with like 5 blocks, because I think he's only credited with 1, right? He didn't get credited with the second one, or did he?
He got the one. He got a lot of credit for the one that Donaldson got against Pitt, because he wiped out the protection and he got his hand on the one. Virginia Tech.
Okay. Offensive lineman of the year.
Yeah.
You think there'll be Zach Frazier love?
Yeah, I think so. I think Nestor's playing very well too.
Yeah. Defensive lineman of the year.
Probably, because I think he's going to get stats. But right now, I wouldn't say that the way anybody's playing right now would get them defensive lineman of the year nominations. Like, sooner or later, stats kind of do matter.
Yeah.
When it comes to these positions and the awards, like, ultimately, the NFL evaluations, you reach a certain point where, like, okay, he's just that guy who doesn't get a lot of stats, but he makes things better. And that's still valuable, but that's not Defensive Player of the Year award in a conference, no.
Right.
But I mean, if he starts hanging up stats, which could happen, then yeah, still this could be. But right now, that's hard to talk me into that.
Yeah, I do think there's, it's a little more weighted to the performance you have in conference as opposed to non-conference. So if he starts, getting on a tear during league play, I could see it happening. But right now, Stills is on pace. We take a third of the way through the season. So multiply what he's got by 3. And again, there's more to it than this. A lot more to it than this. NFL scouts know that. Coaches know that. Players know that. We're talking about voting for all conference awards here. And I'm not sure everybody that votes for that knows that, but Stills is currently on pace for 27 tackles. And 7.5 sacks sounds nice, but 27 tackles, 7.5 sacks, is that, that alone might not get the attention of a lot of voters and get you the votes needed to be the league's best defensive lineman.
Agreed. Yeah.
Coach of the year, I think Leipold probably pretty heavily in front.
But also this, the hole he dug himself in, if Brown ends up with 7-8 wins.
Yeah.
It's a conversation. I don't think he's it, but
if West Virginia suddenly goes crazy second half of the year and ends up in contention or maybe even makes it to the conference championship game, I mean, it's not crazy here, but yeah. And if Kansas ends up 7-5, 6-6, and West Virginia ends up 8-4, 9-3, and in the conference championship game, you could definitely see Neil Brown getting some talk for that.
If they end up 9-3, he's coach of the year.
Yeah. Because then they're in the conference championship game as well.
Yeah, with one loss.
Yeah. So, okay. So about half of the awards, I think you could have some consideration for some West Virginia players there.
That's one more loss. I mean, I know they only had two losses right now, but I mean, they would be nine of right. three, one more loss in this point forward. He's coach of the year probably at that point.
Yeah. All right. That's a good little tangent there to more fully answer those questions. Okay. I don't know if we're going to sit here and list all these, but another question from J. Mole 1989 is the very next one. How many future pros do you think are on the current roster?
I think there's a number of talent, sure.
Yeah, I think it gets a little more difficult the further out you have to project. You know, are we talking C.J. Donaldson, like, already as a freshman? Sure, think it, but he's still got two more years before he can even declare. So
let me pause you there. Where's he playing?
Good point.
I don't know yet. Like, he's a good college prospect, don't get me wrong, but, like, is he going to be tight end? Like, is he going to be a guy that, like, is, like, I'm trying to think of, like, a Mo Alley Cox. You know what I mean? Like, a guy who's kind of positionless. Like, he was, like, what, yeah. college basketball tight end?
Right.
Like, they developed it for a couple years, or Rico Gathers, a guy who develops for a couple years, becomes, like, a problem in, like, mm-hmm. a hybrid thing. I don't know. Is he a halfback in the NFL? I don't think so. Receiver, probably not. Like, he's talented, don't get me wrong, but I wonder about him in the NFL. But that's a long ways from now, for sure.
Well, I think it's safe to say that one way or another, West Virginia's streak of NFL players being drafted will restart this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's safe to assume that Dante Stills will hear his name called at some point. You know, I think you can make all sorts of arguments for where and when, but you know, last year was the first time. God, I did a whole story on this since 2007, 2008. You know, West Virginia had one of the longest streaks in the nation of having players drafted that ended this past season. I think it starts back up again this year, so I think that's safe to say.
Okay, fair. Probably some offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Bryce Fort Wheaton probably gets drafted.
I would think so. I think he's got all the tools. You know, we always talk about it. I always get frustrated when you see guys that are extremely productive in college and they don't even get a look. They don't even get considered. You know, I mean, we're talking, because there'll be guys that'll be all conference and sometimes even all American that will not even get drafted. We've seen it at West Virginia. I guess Tyler Orlowski.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't, you know, guys like that, they're like, oh yeah, you know, short arms or whatever you know, we want to say about why or they didn't get drafted or something, but they're just amazing players. As for some reason, he was his first time off the top of my head. I keep thinking of interior linemen seems to be a thing with West Virginia. Quentin Spain, it was great. Didn't get drafted, ended up starting for a Super Bowl team. So it is what it is, but, yeah, I think you could talk, but oh, sorry, I was going with the Bryce Fort Wheaton thing because, yeah, he's everything you want. He's what, 6'3", he's 215, muscle, great, you know, big, long arms, wingspan, fast, can jump, all that stuff that they're looking for in the NFL. So I could, okay, here you go. Is Bryce Fort, NFL drafts tomorrow. Is Bryce Fort Wheaton getting drafted before Dante Stills?
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
let me answer your question with a question.
Okay.
Is Bryce Ford Whedon going pro?
Let me answer your question to my question with another question. Is JT Daniels going pro?
Like, there's, let's not get too far ahead here, but like, listen, I'll tell you this. Like, I don't have to tell anybody. I spent a lot of time talking to people about the coaching situation and pros and cons. I don't have to say that. Understood. A case to be made for not changing anything is not just the immediate future, but like, there's a chance that this team is loaded on offense next year. Loaded. It takes a lot of talking people into stuff too, but if people really like the coach and the coordinators, they're more likely to come back. And you go down there too deep on offense, show me a senior. It's like Brian Pelendi. And like, everybody else can come back. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but like, there is certainly a way that you could spin things where if they do heat up and they get close to where they want to be at the end of the season, and they like what they're doing and they like the people that are around them. And listen, if they do get hot, they are likely to like their surroundings. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you could bring a ton of people back on offense, a ton, including the quarterback, the receiver, the entire offensive line, Chris. Like, there's a chance they could be very, very good on offense next year. Why that has to do with the draft, I have no idea.
I feel like you wanted to get something off your chest there, Mike.
Oh, you teed me up.
Yeah, let me just, I'll clip that. We'll make it a separate video, and then we'll just put it out everywhere so that everybody can hear. Mike says, everybody's coming back. West Virginia 2023 hype train begins.
Sources tell Ear Sports that everybody's coming back. But, like, go down the list. Like, there's not a lot of seniors on the roster, and like, hardly any of them run on the offensive side that are in, like, again, nothing against Pelendi, but like, significant positions.
All right. Now that we've got excited about the offense, maybe I'll be a Debbie. I know this is going to bring you down because it's your favorite question that was asked 12 times in this mailbag. West Virginia starting secondary for Texas and moving forward. I'm just summarizing, like I said, about 12 different questions that were in here because it's a hot topic. Like, I'm not making fun of the people for asking it because it is. It's been the biggest weakness on this team. Maybe not specifically corners, but kind of just cover pass defense, second and third level defense. Will they make a change? Two, will that change make a difference?
I don't think Spells is going to start.
No. I think you'll see his role increase, but I don't think he'll start either.
Yeah. And this is not to take away from what he did. He did catch a pass thrown not directly to him, and he did return it for a touchdown. So those are good plays, don't get me wrong. But had a holding penalty and a punt, and probably should have given up a touchdown. Kind of hard to forget that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Now, the special teams thing, I'm willing to forgive, but I'm kind of one of those guys who believes in, like, the order of events doesn't necessarily matter to me so much, but the events matter. And almost giving up a touchdown and getting a pick six, they don't offset because they're obviously not the same, but they still matter. And, like, if you flip the order, if he had returned a touchdown earlier in the game but kind of scared you with a pick six late in the game, would you feel differently about him too? Probably. But if they still both happen, you probably should evaluate them the same. So when they happen doesn't really matter to me so much. And I might be unique like that. But I also just think throwing him out there for 70 snaps against Texas and Xavier Worthy or whomever's quarterback or receiver is not the best thing for him. Never mind the defense. It's like, this is a talent, obviously. So develop him. And they've been really good about that. I mean, if you look at Jordan Jefferson, probably I would say him in particular, Sean Martin as well. Like, you might question some of these decisions, but they do seem like they have a general welfare and a general plan of mind, and they're probably putting something like that into action with Spells. The thing is that, like, you and I think, Chris, that corner is not like defensive line. Andrew Wilson-Lamp may have something to say about that. So they have a plan for how to break these guys in and develop them, and he's going to be on a schedule. Did he accelerate it? He probably did. Why he wasn't out there earlier in the season, I don't know. But it's also possible that, again, he just had a ball thrown to him and he made a good play on it and returned it for a touchdown against a team that didn't have a very good offense and a very good quarterback.
I'm with you. I think, again, I haven't been calling specifically for Spells to play more. I've been calling for change, trying something new. You know, I repeated it 1,000 times on here. I don't like it when something doesn't work and you just keep doing the same thing. And West Virginia is not doing the same thing on defense this year or the last couple of weeks. They're trying new things. They're trying new guys. That is extremely positive to see. And I think it will continue. And I think as the weeks progress, you will see them maybe make changes. Like, I think you're going to see, you know, I'm not expecting all of a sudden I'm basically repeating what you're saying here, Mike, they're not just going to go Jacoby Spells from 0 to 70, literally 0 snaps to 70 snaps in like 2 weeks. It was what do you play? 28 against Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. Maybe this week it's like 35 or 34. And then the week after that, it's 38, and kind of just go from there and break him in and ease him into more of a full-time role. If, you know, his play continues to back it up, continues to improve. Because yes, that one, I think it was like the first play that he was in, or the first drive that he was in, was when probably could have been called for defensive holding, and then kind of released his guy. He went, now I know there was some discussion, at least on our board, that it was maybe more of a miscommunication. It seemed like he was literally passing the receiver off to the safety, and the safety was supposed to take him, or he thought the safety was supposed to take him in coverage there, and there was no safety there. But on top of that, communication or not, he went completely flat-footed, which is one of the, you know, cardinal sins of playing in the defensive backfield, not just cornerback, safety, whatever. I mean, I guess playing anywhere, you never want to be flat-footed when you're on a football field and a play is going on. And he was completely flat-footed. So then all of a sudden he's starting from a literal stop to try to get up to full speed to catch up to somebody. So communication or not, there's some fundamental issues there that need to be worked on. Trying to stay, you know, basically just staying focused and staying true to what you're supposed to be doing at that position at all times. And he's a true freshman. It's going to take some time. And so I think you're right that doesn't need to just jump from 0 snaps a week or two ago to 70 snaps in Austin against a potential All-American wide receiver and maybe a former 5-star number one quarterback in the country in Quinn Ewers. So, yeah, I'm with you. Let's ease it in a little bit.
It's a good conversation for the transfer portal topic, too, because really celebrated freshman. Should I say, like, he's from South Florida, too? You know what I mean? Yeah. That's people worry about that sometimes. You come from certain parts of the country, you play big-time high school football, you think you can play. And when you don't play, you get discouraged. And he's playing now, and really right on time. When you look at, like, that whole four-game thing, can kind of be tricky, but he's in a position now to really elevate himself. And you kind of have to do that. If you just put a red shirt on this guy at the start of the year, whether he plays 4 games or 1 game or no games, you really run the risk of losing him. I'm not just picking him out because of him, but like any player who fits that bill, offense, defense, if you're from a good part of the country and you play good high school football and you're not playing for a team that isn't winning at a high level, you're going to wonder about your future. But now he's got something to worry about besides where he's going to play next year.
Well, they're going to help us easily transition into something here, Mike, because one of the other questions was, and I was just going to answer in the written portion, but I guess we can talk about it real quick here from Lynn Kofta. How many players entered the portal now that the fourth game is over? Alluding to the fact that, you know, you can play 4 games and still redshirt for the season. And we have seen over the years, you know, hey, a player here, a player there, play the 4 games, and then that's it. And they transfer in order to say they redshirt the rest of the year, keep a year of eligibility. Went back and looked, trying to figure out, you know, is this a thing to be concerned about? And I think West Virginia fans were, because I believe was it the first year that this was allowed when Javonte Stewart did it? I don't know, maybe like allowed, but I think wasn't that when they started talking about the 4-game rule?
Was that Petway and those guys, right? All the same year.
Yeah, Tevin so. Bush and Javonte Stewart were all like right after the 4th game. Petway, I forgot. He didn't actually enter the transfer portal till much later, but he didn't play like an agreed upon like benching, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
Whatever we want to call it. But so 19 was bad. The first year that that was allowed, and I'm pretty sure that was the first year it was allowed, because I mean, fans were just, that Jevonnie Stewart situation was something. Because it was like right before kickoff, all of a sudden it was like Stewart's just not here, just not coming out. And that's that. When I look back, I don't see too many from the next couple of years. I mean, I look at last year and there was a run. There was a handful that transferred in October out of the program. But here are the names. James Thomas and their names and what I recall being their spot on the depth chart at the time. James Thomas, third string Will linebacker or Mike linebacker. Eddie Watkins, third, fourth string. You know, these guys, some of these guys aren't even on the depth chart. Kerry Martin, I believe, had played like 19 snaps. Daryl Middleton had played like 12 snaps. Devil Washington had not played and was moved from wide receiver to linebacker. Avarius Sparrow was, what, fourth string running back? So I think maybe you look out for those types of guys that are third, fourth string on the roster right now or at their position. Maybe that's something you watch for, but it's hard to imagine guys pulling a Jevonnie Stewart right now.
Avarius Sparrow, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Middle Tennessee.
Hey, I wasn't going to bring it up since that was one of your charity bets picks.
Oh, my God.
What's the Miami double?
Brutal.
I didn't even look to see if.
Oh, yeah, they won.
Red Hawks kept their. Yeah, they won. So yeah. You had the Red Hawks and the Hurricanes, and it was the Hurricanes that screwed you. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Mr. Sparrow did not get in on the day ruining for me, but has 8 carries, 5 rushes. I saw him on the sideline was the reason I brought that up, because I did see him. I was like, I think I know that guy, and I did, but not many of those guys have gone on to illustrious careers either.
No. As I say, we were just looking at, I think Martin's playing for Akron, but he was a guy that at the time, you know, they were rumored to be talking about, you know, redshirting him for the entire season. So you understood why he was leaving. Daryl Middleton, I think, played like a dozen snaps, and he's at a D3 school. He's currently listed on Bethel University's roster, but has not played in a game at a Division III program. So, you know, for a lot of the people that were, you know, wondering why he wasn't playing a ton at West Virginia, I mean, there's several reasons, but, you know, right now he can't get on the field for a D3 program. So it's sometimes I think a lot of people need to slow down a little bit when it comes to guys leaving the program and the devastating program altering impact it might have.
Do you think that the windows will slow this down? It doesn't really affect it necessarily. You can still announce your decision to transfer or to not play anymore. But
right.
I wonder if it keeps people from doing it now too.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, I just talked about that with somebody the other day, but you're right. Like, I guess no one's going to enter the portal this week. We can guarantee that. But yeah, they might pull, I guess we'll call it a pet away or whatever, and just not be playing. And, you know, I mean, you're right. Guys could just not be on the roster, could not be around the team and just be going to school, and they can't contact other programs and other programs can't contact them since they'll not be in the portal, but they can start the process. As we all know, there are people who can handle that type of stuff, if you will.
Something to keep an eye on.
Yep. 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 Let's see, roll through here. One last question, because this we'll finish it with this, because this starts today, at least for you and I. Basketball season. First day of practice today, Monday, September 26th. And we got a question from Main Ear 105. What should I look forward to more, Mike? The rest of the football season or the upcoming basketball season?
Kind of excited about football, right?
Yeah, I mean, I say there's no reason to be done with football right now at all. Like, I know there's times, I know there's been years where basketball starts and you're just thankful that the hope for a new sport is there. But I don't think things are done with football right now. So I think it's a good time to, hey, just root for both of them and come to the site twice as often. How about that?
There you go. Guys are making clicks.
There you go. I can't believe I just laughed at your Bob Huggins twist on that.
What's going to happen when that comes up today? We got guys who can make shots.
But the most important question, do they like each other?
Wonderful guys. By the way, this is the first time I've seen Huggins since he was named to the Hall of Fame. Never mind inducted. I was just thinking about that the other day. I haven't seen him forever. Like end of the season, like there was a couple things afterwards. And then when did he get announced for the Hall of Fame? Like May?
Yeah, I think that's about when they do it. Like it's after. No, wait, do they not announce it during like the Final Four?
Well, okay. Well, he went at the Final Four, so I wasn't covering that. So like it was some time ago, I'm sure. And then like just there was no celebration for him on campus. Like there was no like news conference saying, hey, you did it. Congratulations. There was a Zoom, I think, which I couldn't attend, but that was 2 weeks ago. So it's kind of a typical Huggins thing, you know, where like the big thing happens and he's just kind of like, eh, whatever. Not a big deal to him. Although yeah. I'm pretty sure it is, but like typical Huggins, my thing being that like he's not going to really throw a parade for himself there too. It'll probably let the university do that. So I'm sure I'll have things to say about that today. Probably a big weekend for him that he can finally talk about now.
Yeah, April 2nd. Yeah, they announced it during Final Four weekend.
Yeah, so haven't seen him in a while.
Haven't seen him since then.
Looking forward to the goatee, the slick back hair. I'm sure I'll have something to say about my appearance as he usually does. So just like old times.
We saw him on Zoom a couple weeks ago for the Hall of Fame thing. And I'm disappointed that my favorite one was the year where he was spotted at a recruiting event late July, August, somewhere around there. And just looked completely tan. Like and with the white goatee, completely tan. And I think, God, what was it? Somebody called and asked if that was Chris Christopherson or something like that. Just a completely tan Chris Christopherson with the white beard and everything. It's just a fantastic picture of him at some recruiting event and looking like he just stepped back off a beach from Panama or something.
Well, he's got that cabin down the cabin in the woods in Preston County, and he's got the beach house down in Florida too. So I don't know, maybe he's getting pretty content about those long summers in the sun.
Yeah,
but not this year.
No,
lots
sir.
Of questions to ask and answer today, too, about how they're going to make this work. 14 players, 13 scholarships, 9 freshmen or transfers. And schedule's not easy, too, so there'll be a lot to look forward to there, too. So I guess you could maybe eyes wide open and maybe, like, look through your fingers at the other sport. I don't know. Like, football going to be eventful for sure. I think basketball is going to be eventful, but, like, it might be a bit of a rock tumbler early. Until they figure some things out, just because that schedule is like there's some quick action, like 4 games in 11 days to start, and then you get that tournament in Oregon. It's going to be pretty heavy duty pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And no let up either. I think I glanced over that schedule, and man, the start to Big 12 play, that ain't easy.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least 7 ranked teams. 5 in the Big 12, Auburn. If they win, they get Gonzaga, be 7. Is Purdue ranked? Can't remember. I don't know. A lot of good basketball early on throughout the season. Then in the middle of Big 12 play, you get Auburn. That's going to be fun, too. So, yeah, I mean, both. The answer is both.
Absolutely. Mike, what do you got coming up this week?
Typical things. Got text from game day up right now. We'll ask some questions about week 4 that have to be answered in week 5. And then we'll get into our elbow deep in Texas prep. Lots of matchups here, including a couple you might like and might want to worry about, too, depending on who plays for both sides. You have a Charles Woods update for us?
Not right now. I know that was in the mailbag, but I haven't heard anything new. I mean, he's moving around. Surgery was last week, a week ago. So expect at least, you know, 3-4 more weeks before anything really to start coming up with him.
And another guy who could be back next year, too.
Mm-hmm.
Redshirt.
Mike is starting the hype train.
Get those WVU 2023 futures now. Caesar Sportsbook, partnering with CBS, of course. Until next time, I'm Mike Sazza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
We'll talk to you later.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.